Blog Talk Radio.
Friends out there that are listening live and the ones recording for later. Well, thank you for joining us. Remember,
in the Second Amendment.
What do we got going on here?
There we go.
NRA's jumping right in, taking over.
Absolutely. That's part of tonight's topic, Bill.
Excuse me, was that God's voice I just heard?
No.
Whose voice was that?
Yeah, it was the guy who played God. He played God once, I think.
That's right, I think he did, brother. And he's
Constitution.
Got that good voice going
right
on right there.
Well, you know, Bill.
Listen to God.
There's a couple of things going on here, Bill.
By the way, we're talking about Charlie.
Charlton Heston.
That's right.
Okay. He did a video about kids knowing about the Constitution, Bill. And
they don't know nothing about the Constitution.
No. But just like today, I got a couple emails about gun control. Seems the NRA is endorsing a gun control bill in Congress, Bill. Therefore, this bill would ban both the open carry and concealed carry of handguns. H.R. 645 bans the open carry of long guns, rifles, and shotguns as well. The article is in the Examiner in Los Angeles. So, you know, a few people have said, this is why I belong to the Gun Owners of America. If competition is healthy for free enterprise, then competition is healthy for the NRA. Go join the Gun Owners of America today.
Join somebody, though.
Absolutely. So, you know, the National Rifle Association also endorsed the Federal Gun Control Act of 1968, which was patterned after the Nazi gun control laws. You can continue reading this at the, I'll put it in the chat, but you can continue reading this there. It's an LA Times article.
Interesting article. It's pretty boring reading, but it's interesting the fact that the meat of the subject is another one of our rights possibly being tampered with,
absolutely.
Control with that.
Absolutely.
This thing right Charlton here. Heston speaks. Damn it, pay attention.
Right, and this is called Charlton Heston's A Torch with No Flame.
Right. I mean, you consider yourself a keeper of the flame, and you intend to pass that torch on to the next generation of Americans. So tell me, if you could see into the next century and know whether the Second Amendment is still intact or in shambles, would you look? If someone could predict the outcome a half a hundred years from now of all your conviction and commitment and hard work, would you listen? Well, you can.
What guarantees me freedom? Oh. That's a hard question. What is the Constitution? I don't know. Guarantee
me
freedom? I don't know.
May we be the keepers of the flame?
No, I do not think everybody should have a right to own a gun.
What is the Constitution? I don't know.
Guns, in general, are very bad.
What is the Constitution? I don't know. What's the Constitution?
Hold on 1 second. We'll get back to that. We got a caller. I want to see who this caller is. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Come on, you're live. What do you want to say?
845.
Yeah.
Hello, 845.
Jump in.
Yo, hello.
Hello.
Bill? Yeah, Bill, can you hear
me? Phil, can you hear me?
Yeah, well, you're coming in. Are you on a cell phone or?
Hey, hold on a minute.
Breaking up.
We're having a hard time picking you up.
Yeah. How's that? Any better?
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah.
Is that a little bit better?
Yeah.
Well, what you want to talk about tonight? Identify yourself, please.
It's Larry Tremblay with the Marine Bike.
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Hey, buddy, how we doing?
How you guys doing tonight?
Not bad.
He was just getting a big deal on Charlton Heston and gun control, so thank God you stopped him. He could go on for hours on that.
No.
Yes, you would.
No, I won't. If you can hold on for a couple minutes, Larry, while I play this, let me finish it, and then I recognize the number. I didn't want to leave you on hold.
No, as a matter of fact, I was sitting here listening to it because it's amazing how the kids today don't
exactly.
Know.
So I'm going to leave you unmuted, so once this is over, you can jump in at any time, okay?
You're back in live, brother. Okay.
Get
back to Charlton Heston and those children of America that don't know nothing.
Nothing, I'll tell you.
Here we go.
I don't
know. Will they carry the torch?
I have no idea what the Second Amendment is. An amendment is...
and liberty and happiness in accordance with and under the protection of the law. the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is the passion we must ignite in those who follow. All of us who feel that surge of pride, the chill of the genuine glory of a free people able to protect their own freedom. So what are we doing about it? Yes, we didn't blame violent crime or Sarah Brady or the media or bullet-riddled movies, and certainly some blame is due. But what effort has our generation spent to make sure the next generation feels as deeply as we do? If we focus on anti-gun legislation but ignore an anti-gun generation, if we spend years as pro-gun activists but only minutes as pro-gun mentors, if we've earned the support of this generation of office holders but not the next generation of voters, we will have failed. We must tell it, teach it, live it, breathe it. Every one of us born beneath this blessed American sky has rights nobody can take away, because no one gave them to us. They were ours from the beginning. Each of us has a birth certificate, but it didn't give us life. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are alive. In the same way, the Constitution didn't give us rights. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are free to say and write and think and work and worship as we choose. We're free to own a firearm, and that right shall not be infringed. If you consider yourself a freedom-loving patriot, you can't shirk your duty to teach America's young to understand the Second Amendment, to revere it, to embrace it, to defend it, and in their turn, to bequeath it. That's what we have to do. We, the teachers, the neighbors, the clergy, the uncles, the grocers, the legislators, the scoutmasters, the parents, the Americans. Only then can we pass the torch with that sacred flame that lights the American way.
Wow. Every time I hear him speak, I feel like I'm not doing enough for my neighborhood or my community.
Hello, Liberty. Is that you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. How you doing, guys?
Good. We have Larry. Larry Tremblay is on the phone with the Marine Bike. This is Jan.
Hi, Larry.
Larry.
How you doing?
I'm out in North Carolina.
Larry's up in New York, right?
Yes, I'm up in New York.
Well, I was just making a statement. Every time he speaks,
I didn't mean to interrupt, I'm sorry. You step on me all the time.
It's okay. Your statements are more important than my statements. I understand. I feel I'm not doing enough for my neighborhood or my country. I feel that people like him are out there saying, hey, step up to the plate. And every time that man speaks, I feel I should do more. How do you feel about that guy?
Yeah, okay. I can understand why you would want to do more. I would like to do more also. But on the same token, what about our educators? How many times have you seen Jay Leno, Howard Stern, whomever, go out on the street, ask a simple question of what's the capital of a certain state, and they don't know, or what's the Bill of Rights, they don't know, or the Constitution, what does it entail? They'll come out with the Gettysburg Address. What is
find
going
the United,
on?
Find the United States on a map of countries that show the borders but don't show the names of the countries.
Exactly.
And people pointing at, like, Australia.
Yeah. You know, that's the part that absolutely floors me. I hear about the teachers losing jobs and this, that, and the next thing. But then you go and you talk to the average person. I was on a construction site in Fort Lee, New Jersey. We had to work on a machine. And across the river was Manhattan. On the Jersey side, if you're looking at the skyline, there's like a building that comes out into the Hudson River, which I later found out was they used for the garbage scows. And we pulled up. I says, geez, I wonder what that is. The guy who had to be 5 years younger than me, You know what his answer was? That's Pearl Harbor. I asked him to get the hell out of my truck. That's what I did. Dumbass.
Too dumb to ride with me.
Can you? I couldn't. And this is a graduate of one of our magnet schools up here, upstate New York. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Well, that's like I work on Mission Bay. I work on a Navy base, right by Coronado Island. Everything. And we had a guy come from Korea, and we were walking him around and teaching him, you know, showing him the yard and the ships and everything. And I asked him, I said, do you know the name of that, you know, the water right here and everything? Do you know what that is? He goes, yeah, that's the South Bay. That's Imperial Beach. Instead of looking south, he's looking north.
They don't know.
Right.
The name of the bridge, you hear about that?
No.
Possibly making the Ronald Reagan Bridge.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
I hope they don't, because that bridge has been the bridge forever with them. Let me ask you a question. This happened to me just the other day, and I don't mean to deviate off the subject. I want to get back to it, but it's been bugging me. A gentleman asked me about, so you mentioned Pearl Harbor.
Right.
A gentleman mentioned to me that after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, Japan, Italy, and of course Russia, Germany, they're all in the Axis power. We know Joe Stalin jumped from the Axis to the Allies back and forth and all that. But when Pearl Harbor was attacked, Hitler did not officially attack America until 4 months later. And yet, we all know what happened after Pearl Harbor. We pretty much fought a delaying action against the Japanese, and we concentrated on fighting the Nazis.
Uh-huh.
And that was all that had to do with Roosevelt making that decision. In my mind, and I thought about it, if the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, we should have gone after Japan first. And I had quite a discussion with a gentleman today about that. Should we attack the Japanese right away from attacking us? Or should we have gone on with Roosevelt's ideas? We leave them on the wayside and we attack Europe first. That's our biggest enemy. Anybody want to comment on that?
Well, the way I understand it is that Japan was was Germany's ally.
Correct. And Italy also.
And Italy also. Japan was taking care of the, that would be the eastern side of the Europe or Asia and all that. Germany was going to take care of the rest, along with Italy. So if they were begging us to get into the war anyway, Japan just gave us the excuse to jump in.
But the impetus was because of Roosevelt that he wanted us to focus on the European front and to just play a delay in action in the Philippines and Iwo Jima and all the small islands, just place a delay in action, focus everything on fighting Hitler when it was Japan that attacked America. Hitler didn't agree to the war till 4 months later.
I think you're going to have a lot of World War II guys that were over in Japan, and Marines disagree with you on that because, they caught hell over there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We did not give them enough to fight with. They were fighting a delaying action. It wasn't until we finally defeated the Nazis and all that we started sending those bombers. Then finally we dropped the two atomic bombs on Japan. We didn't focus on Japan. Remember the first time we attacked Japan was Doolittle. He sent those bombers over in a one-way mission. That's the only action we really took that was aggressive. Everything else was defensive because Roosevelt said that we need to take care of the business in Europe first, even though Japan punched us in the nose first.
All those Midway, all those islands, that was all... No, I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I'm going to disagree with you. Maybe they didn't get everything that they needed, but we attacked a ton of islands over there. Iwo Jima, I can't... The names are just dead in my head right now, but...
Those islands actually were a little bit towards the end because we needed those islands to bomb Japan. But and initially, we gave the Marines and the Army just enough to fight a sustaining battle, giving them enough information or equipment to fight Japan. It wasn't until we were ready to attack Japan, we needed those islands so our bombers could attack Japan.
Right. I understand that. We had to go take the islands in order to get our bombers in there.
Right.
That's a good one. I'm going to have to...
I guess I got to turn the History Channel on again. I don't know enough about it.
And I'm thinking, well, I never thought about that. Well.
No. Oh, boy. That's a really good question. I'm going to... Well, even today, the Marines say that they get what's ever left. I don't know.
I know. You're talking to a voice of experience here. We were on a shoestring budget.
Yeah, right?
Well, so maybe just get back to gun control a little bit. How's that then? We'll leave that there. And you know, talk more about that war situation again. Let's talk about that gun control. I think that, again, first of all, I don't know who writes his speeches. I think he's the most articulate. I think his speeches are always, I'll talk Charles Houston again, of course, Charles Nelson. I think that every time he speaks, it's like I keep thinking Moses and God from the Ten Commandments and all that. I'm listening to that man.
He is definitely a way of words, doesn't he? yes, he is a very, very well-spoken man. What happened to North Carolina? She needs to jump in here.
Yeah, jump in anywhere. Let's get back to the. Sorry for deviating everybody, but
I'm here.
We're talking about Charleston Houston. How do you think he represents the NRA? Did he represent what you're saying? How do you feel about that?
I loved Charlton Heston. He was great. Did you ever see what his basement looked like in his house?
I just did 5 minutes ago, and I was choked on the Pepsi I was drinking.
Oh my God! So you saw the picture, like the vault?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you seen that, Larry?
No, I haven't.
Ah. If you punch in Charlton Heston's basement on your computer, just sit back and just feast your eyes on what this guy had in his basement.
Really?
20-millimeter cannons, machine guns, every gun you could think of, Gatling guns, all kinds of shit. And he it's a vault. His house is built on top of his vault.
Wow. Well, collectors,
I'll send you the link.
It's absolutely mouth-dropping. It's unbelievable.
Really,
back to the education a little bit. I'm kind of anti the current education status because I think we play too much emphasis on sports. Now, I played sports all through high school, but mostly it was waiting for me to get out of class. I think that the reading, writing, and arithmetic has to go back. I think the teachers should be judged at the end of the year whether they're productive or not. I think I'm not into tenure. If you can't produce, you need to be out on the street. I think that the students that cannot be taught, we have to go back and blame the teachers. I do not care about million-dollar football stadiums in Texas. I don't care about lacrosse teams. For me, sports was simply a way for me to get out of class. I played every sport there was because I got out of class. In retrospect, I'm realizing what was the – and we treat the – they call them student athletes. I don't think so. I think they're athlete students.
Right.
We need
Bill,
education. Yes, sir.
Yeah, there was a school that was being built up in Hollywood or one of those towns. I think it was Hollywood. It might have been like Bel Air, but it was going to cost $500 million. I mean, you should see this thing. I mean, for all the rich kids, but that's public funds being used to build that magnificent school. I mean, their auditorium would rival, the Rockefeller Center or something.
The Rose Bowl.
Amazing. Yeah.
If you go down the road just a little bit to Compton. And those people in that minority community, they don't have hardly anything. Talk about gerrymandering, if you would. This section gets this section gets that. It's all control thing. It's all control.
Yeah.
I went to school. Yeah. I'm so old. I want you to understand that I am so old. I come out from Boston. And sophomore and junior high school, I started out here. My school had no TV, none of those visual audio aids, none of that stuff going on. Every afternoon, my teacher would have me read to the class so the class could laugh at my Boston accent. That was the whole education thing we had there. And it did me a world of good because I got to learn to speak everywhere. But we didn't have all this extra money spent for gays and all that. But I do know, again, jocks have a tendency to take advantage of the system. By more sports you play, the more you get out of class.
I'm thinking about my high school days when back in the day. We had to have a certain grade average.
Yeah.
If you fell below it, you didn't play. I don't know. It was your better players. Well, even your better players were smart enough not to to drop below, and they didn't need the sort of we call the walking papers. You know, to teach your passion because you're a better sport, better football player than a student. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sports is a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Well, sports is a good thing, but unfortunately, it's such an icon in the schools that we're teaching. Again, it's not student-athletes, it's athlete-students. The emphasis on the athletes were there.
Right.
When they started drawing all this revenue in, they started making all this money, we took that sports into a different light. When I played sports, let's talk about football. If my nose was broken, all that, my coach would put his two palms together and push my nose back to where it was. Just go out there and play the game for the sake of the game.
It didn't work.
Today, a student-athlete is on so much pressure. We have television. We have cable TVs going. I mean, table sports going on. We've got so much emphasis on bringing revenue into the schools and more popularity. I think, in a sense, we've almost bastardized sports. Whatever happened to you and I just going at it for the sake of just going at it, and after the game and all that, just shake hands and say good luck to you? Now it's all about corporate sponsorship, logos, and all that stuff. So I think it's changed since our day, brother. I really do.
Oh, yes, it has. There's no question about it. I agree with corporate sponsors to put up lights, but leave their names out of off the field. Corporate sponsors put up the goal sign, the scoreboards. Leave the name off the scoreboard. Let the school name be up there. You know,
well, that's like one time deal
in the paper, done. You know, they did a good thing. Okay, you got recognition for it. It's over with. But yeah,
we're being hypocrites because we're telling our students one thing, but we're showing the money's coming in. We're being hypocrites. We're lying to our athletes, our students. We're telling them what you need to do is achieve, and you'll get big money. We're not emphasizing the education. That's why I think education is falling behind.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And, you know, I had a friend of mine who played for West Virginia college ball. And he hit home with me on it. Because all these kids out here want to play. They think they're going to go to the pros and this, that. It's 1%. Less than 1% make it to the pros. So, you know, come on, kids. Let's get your feet back on the ground. Get an education. And any guy with half a brain that's professional, look at the center for the 49ers years ago. He was a lawyer.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. He was back in Joe Montana's day and Young's day. He was a lawyer.
Yeah.
How many years of college did the guy? Because he knew after football, he needed something to fall back on, or it was a good thing to do because of all the contracts that he has to go through. You know, these guys.
That's just like here in our town. We've had Willie Buchanan, Junior Seau, I forget the other names.
That's a good football players, basically.
Good football players.
Yeah, yeah.
But they all went to colleges in California,
mm-hmm.
UCLA, USC. But most of the guys have been going to USC. I'm talking big, good Samoan kids that know how to play ball. And then after, once they get to college, that's it. You never hear from them. It's one, like you said, it's that 1% that usually gets it. That's it.
Athletes say, the young kids, they're thinking, I get myself a good manager, somebody's going to represent me, and I'm going to get me some money. And where about the love of sports? What's going on, you know? Do we really care? You know, if you came at me in the old days, we played football in the mud. Remember that? We didn't have no stadiums and all that. In fact, in my school, if you had a clean uniform on by halftime, you were on the bench. You want to come out muddy and dirty and all that. The girls love that, I think.
But today it's
all about what can I do to let the pros see me? And, again, we're taking the change. I think we're doing like 180 different in the purpose of going to college. We tell our athletes, oh, you need education. We all know that if they're a great athlete, the college, the university is going to cut them every slack, bend over backwards. That's a fact.
Yep.
These
yep.
don't, you know,
yep.
high school ball is innocent. But
yeah, and be honest with you, it starts right in their household. You know, if the kid's
yep.
good in high school, the parents start pushing. And next thing you know, the kid's falling by the wayside someplace because he's not really up for it.
Or he has one injury and he's wiped out.
Yep, all done. Scholarship goes away, everything goes away. Yep.
Well, you know, as we're talking about kids and learning about Constitution and gun control and the Second Amendment and all that, I want you guys to, Jan, you got any comments before I do this?
Well, you know, I was just thinking of Pat Tillman.
Yeah, good
exactly.
idea.
There we go.
That was an American.
What a great guy.
He didn't have to do that.
His whole family.
I mean, there's a lot of guys out there like him. You know, they sit by. They don't get the recognition, but they still do it. Here's a guy with the recognition and still does it. You know, you got to give all the guys kudos, man.
He
really
walked away from a $25 million contract to do that.
Yep. There's some heroic guys out there. I mean, I meet a lot
of
them.
You know, look at the difference between Pat Tillman and Michael Vick, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
What a slime ball.
Yeah, let's go back to World War II for a second. Look how many Hollywood stars jumped in, signed up, joined the military, and did action. Jimmy Stewart, it goes on and on and on. These people didn't have to do any of that, but they felt, as Americans, it was their duty. For that, I applaud every one of them, not just the athletes, also the actors and actresses. You know?
Yep. Well, Jimi Hendrix was in the Army during Vietnam time, wasn't he, if I'm not mistaken?
No, sir, he was not. His brother was in the Vietnam War. Jimi Hendrix was Airborne Ranger, broke his leg in a jump, and he was discharged, honorably discharged and all that, but because he broke his leg, he was not. Now, the height of the Black Power movement, they all came to him, the Black Panthers, they said, we want you to support us. And he said publicly, my brother is in the military. My brother is fighting in Vietnam. You will not use me to make a statement against that. I thought that was Jimi Hendrix's finest hour.
Outstanding. Yep. There you go.
But anyway,
I'm sorry.
No. That's great. But since we're talking about this, I don't know if you guys remember this, but this is Red Skelton did this a few years ago. But it's he's going to talk about the pledge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. That's good. This is good, guys. Haven't heard it in a while, though. Also got a great voice, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade.
That's the key word right there, teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference between a good teacher and a bad teacher.
Seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher who was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell was his... He says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a... that shouts, freedom is everybody's junk. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose, all divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation. And justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Now, that guy had it right.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Because his vision came true.
Yeah, that was...
Betsy, you're on.
Yes. Hey, Phil. Hi, Bill.
Hello. We also have Jan and Larry on.
Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. I absolutely love that rendition by Red Skelton. I believe it should be played in every school. I have sent it out far and wide, and I just it kind of grabs me every time I hear it, and it's just a shame that somehow in the translation over the past several administrations, we've lost that from the people to the leaders. It seems.
Republic.
Yeah, exactly. And we need to get back to that.
We need to get back to where we can actually respect and revere our leaders. I've not been proud of Congress senators in a long time. I would not possibly want a Congress or senator to come to my daughter's schools. They end up so many bribery and all that. The image is tainted so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I totally agree. I did get an email from Ron Paul the other day. I haven't had a chance to read it and in its entirety, but I believe there was something in there about he's looking for help to send him to Iowa, and I'm wondering if he isn't going to put in a bid to run for president again.
If you got a dollar in your pocket, put that dollar down as a solid bet. I'm hearing everywhere in California he's got a grassroots movement going. I'm just now starting to read about what he's talking about because I don't know. And so I can't disagree or agree with what he's saying, but everywhere I'm going, I'm hearing this underground movement, Ron Paul, Ron Paul,
well,
Ron Paul. So
Jan,
pay attention.
Jan, you get updates from Ron Paul all the time, don't you?
No, but yes, actually, yes.
Yes. Yes. You know what? Do you see in your switchboard, you've got ability to make a phone call.
Uh-huh.
You can call him up right now if you want.
Oh, yeah, he is awesome. I actually wrote him in at the last election.
Want a phone number?
Oh, sure. Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. Let me grab a pen. Because I certainly will take up the charge and support him here.
Go ahead.
And put
okay.
it out there.
Okay. Plug this right into that switchboard. You know, click on the dial and then plug in this number.
Okay.
888-322-1414.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, hold on. Hold on, Betsy.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't tell me she's going to call now.
No. I think Philip is.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk to Ron.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly
update
for February 14th.
Cool.
14th.
Past three decades, the Federal Reserve has been given a dual mandate, keeping prices stable and maximizing employment. This policy relies not only on the fatal conceit of believing in the wisdom of supposed experts, but also on numerical chicanery. Rather than understanding inflation in the classical sense as a monetary phenomenon, an increase in the money supply, it has been redefined as an increase in the consumer price index. The CPI is calculated based upon a weighted basket of goods, which is constantly fluctuating, allowing for manipulation of the index to keep inflation expectations low. Employment figures are much the same, relying on survey data, seasonal adjustments, and birth and death models, while the major focus remains on the unemployment rate. Of course, the unemployment rate can fall as discouraged workers drop out of the labor market altogether, leading to the phenomenon of falling unemployment rates with no job growth. In terms of keeping stable prices, the Fed has failed miserably. According to the government's own CPI calculators, it takes $2.65 today to purchase what cost $1 in 1980. And since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has presided over a 98% decline in the dollar's purchasing power.
Wow.
The average American family sees the price of milk, eggs, and meat increasing, while packaged household goods decrease in size rather than price. Loose fiscal policy has failed to create jobs also. Consider that we had a $700 billion TARP program, nearly $1 trillion in stimulus spending, a government takeover of General Motors, and hundreds of billions of dollars of guarantees to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, HUD, FDIC, etc. On top of those programs, the Federal Reserve has provided over $4 trillion worth of assistance over the past few years through its credit facilities, purchases of mortgage-backed securities, and now its second round of quantitative easing. Yet even after all these trillions of dollars of spending and bailouts, total non-farm payroll employment is still 7 million jobs lower than it was before this crisis began. In this same period of time, the total U.S. population has increased by 9 million people. We would expect that roughly 4 million of these people should have been employed, so we are really dealing with 11 million fewer employed people than would otherwise be expected. It should not be surprising that monetary policy is ineffective at creating actual jobs. It is the effects of monetary policy itself that cause the boom and bust of the business cycle that leads to swings in the unemployment rate. By lowering interest rates through its loose monetary policy, the Fed spurs investment in long-term projects that would not be profitable at market-determined interest rates. Everything seems to go well for a while until businesses realize that they cannot sell their newly built houses, their inventories of iron ore, or their new cars.
Okay, screwdriver, listen to me. All I'm hearing from this guy is statistics. He's pulling them out of whatever hip pocket he's pulling them out of. And maybe I haven't heard anything yet, but I've not heard him give us a simple solution or suggestion. Jan, Betsy, did I miss hearing that, or am I just hearing numbers?
Well, I think he was pretty much outlining the situation that we are in, but if you do a little further reading on him, I believe, and maybe Jan can expound upon this more, that he does have solutions. Am I not correct with that, Jan?
Well, one of the things that that I really like right now that has happened is Ron is in he's now the chair of a judiciary committee that has a watchful eye over the Fed, and this is nothing but good.
Exactly.
Let me tell you. It
well,
Jen,
you
so
need to give this guy a call in person, if you don't mind, and say, listen, Bill Kennedy out there in California, he listened, all there was a bunch of statistics and facts. Next time I call, and I like to hear him saying, this is what's wrong with America, and this is how I'm going to try to change it. That's the message I want for somebody running for president.
Okay, I believe he did that with his last campaign, and if memory serves me correctly, part of it was to stop giving to illegal aliens, get rid of them, and something about a flat tax. Like I said, it's been several years, but he did, and what I will do is I will get you, I'll look for his platform, and I'll get you the information.
One of the most immediate things that Ron Paul called for was a complete withdrawal from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
And that alone, I mean, that, how long have we been over there in Iraq? That was 2003, I believe.
Was it going
on
9 years?
And it was 2002 for Afghanistan. And so, so that's a protracted stay.
And the other thing that he said was, we have troops in countries where we're not at war. And
I just want to let you guys know that the reason Larry called in was I was asking for some updates on the things that he's been up to with his Marine tribute bike.
Wait! I want to stop you. I want to know how Larry feels about pulling the troops out for the Middle East. How do you feel about that?
I want to see them out of Iraq, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's my oldest son's there right now.
Right.
Afghanistan, I understand that for the simple reason is that's where everything, where 9/11 happened, where they attacked us. We needed to go in there and clean house. Unfortunately, we didn't. We put Afghanistan on the back burner while we concentrated on Iraq. Now we're back in Afghanistan, and it's almost like we're started from square one, like we did in Iraq. We should have never went to Iraq.
That absolutely was right on that. I want to jump in and say something here. 1970, I was a guest of the country of Iran. I lived in Tehran. I was in the United States Army. I was subcontracted to the Iranian government doing some work over there. While there, I got to know the Shah's Palace. I went to the Russian embassy. I got to know the people that live there. And the people that live there, they said to me, Bill, we like you. You're a good guy. You come to our weddings. You come to our homes. We embrace you. We love you. Please never forget this, Bill. You are not Muslim. We will side with our cousin who we hate if it comes down to it. We will never side with you. When Kuwait was attacked, no Muslim countries went over there. We Christians went over there. How could we embrace these people? They hate us. Iran, Iraq, all out. We're not Muslims. They don't want Christians over there. The Red Cross flag in America, white background, big Red Cross, they won't even allow that in those countries. They have the red half the moon. What the hell is it called? I forgot now. Anybody out there help me? What's the...
Red Crescent Moon.
They didn't allow the American Red Cross in there. They don't want Christians. The only way we can deal with Muslim countries is if other Muslim countries deal with it. When Kuwait was attacked, Iran, Iraq, all those Muslim countries should have jumped in. Did they? No.
No.
Christians jumped. They don't want us there. When a Muslim man is walking down the street with his Muslim wife, and he comes to an American checkpoint, they do not want a Christian man asking his Muslim wife for identification. They don't want Muslim men to talk to their Muslim wives. Every time a Christian stops and asks a woman in the Muslim countries anything, it's an insult. We do not belong in there. They don't want us in there. So why are we in there? Oil interest.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
Sorry
you
about
very
that,
much.
Guys.
Well,
in terms of Afghanistan, we've got how many troops? Over 100,000 troops. And who are we looking for? About 50 al-Qaeda who are over the border in Pakistan.
So. It might be a little bit more than 50, but yeah, they're over in Pakistan in the no man's land up in the north, and we're not allowed to go in there.
Nope.
But I think we're going in. I think we do. We're reaching out and touching them.
Well, I happen to be privy every day. I'm on a different Navy ship, but I was on one the other day. I can't tell you the name of it, but I was in the communications room. And then I was escorted into that back black room, they call it. And I watched some stuff on the screen in front of me, and I was amazed. Just the technology that we have where I could see these people's faces from 12 miles up.
Wow.
Yep.
Let's talk about the religions for a second. The Muslims are burning out the Christian churches. They're trying to eliminate the Christian all Christian religions. We have to understand, unless we're going to put together an army full of Muslims, we do not belong overseas. That is the bottom line, because they don't want us there.
Right. They want our money. They want what we can give them, but
then
you can leave. Then go home and get the hell out of there.
That's hit right on the head. I don't know why the world can't see this. 1970, I spent a year there, and I learned this. And I've talked to people over and over and over and over, and it's like deaf ears. Our government doesn't seem to pick up the message up there. Christians are not. Muslims have generations of hatred, and it's going to stay hatred. Christians do not fit in the Muslim world. This is not against the Muslim religion. I'm talking about the Muslim countries. They don't want us there. That's the bottom line, gentlemen and ladies.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Paul for a second here. You know, I followed somebody else a while back. Everybody remember Ross Perot?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was interesting. Jan Betsy, you remember him? Did you follow his speeches
voted
at all
for him.
Before he went crazy?
I voted for
before
Ron.
He went out of his mind.
I mean,
Ross. He was a good choice. I was listening to one of his speeches, and he said this, and this is where he lost me. I own many businesses. Not one of my employees will ever have a mustache or a beard. I said, well, lost me here. It's a small thing. Some people
that
may
would have lost me.
Yeah, it's a small thing. And then remember when his daughter was allegedly kidnapped?
No.
Remember that election?
No, I don't remember.
And then, she wasn't kidnapped, and all publicity. I was with this man all the way up to the point. So I'm believing that Ron Paul, I'm going to do as much information investigation as I can to make sure we got a good guy, because Pearl almost had me until he said the mustache and the beard. That threw me out the door. Oh, no long hair, of course, you know.
Yeah, you know, the thing about politicians, there's one thing that I look for is they can come out and they tell you this, they tell you that, and they make the world look rosy, like they're going to make it all nice and rosy, clean, and shiny again. What I look for is what did they do in the past?
Right.
And you'll find out that most of these senators and whatnot, they don't even show up for their own meetings. So, you know, they're all of them are a bunch of BSers as far as I'm concerned. They ought to get rid of the whole load of them and just try all over again. Because our forefathers are rolling in their graves. Either
and
laughing
we need
at
term
us.
Limitations. This is not a job you're going to retire for the rest of your life. And you do the job, then step back, let somebody else do the job. That's how I feel about that.
We got a senator. He's I'm not going to drop the name. He does a lot for the vets up here and whatnot. The guy's six figures retirement.
Yeah.
You know, come on. Hey, wait a minute. Time out here. There's something wrong here. You know, you're retired. He's still a senator, but he's also collected a pension now, also because he's of age to get his retirement.
He's double dipping.
His retirement was phenomenal. Meanwhile, there's guys in New York State that don't have jobs, can't hold on to their houses. They're taxing us to beat hell. You can't drive half the guys. You can't ride your bike down the street without getting stopped for anything and everything. And if they can't find something, they'll make, they'll, you know, they almost make stuff up. God forbid you have one of them novelty helmets on. They'll probably lock you up and throw you in jail and get you, give you a $350 fine.
Well, there's a way around that.
Get out and vote.
Well, yes. You know, just as long as we touched upon that subject, a heads up to anybody that's heading out to Daytona this year, be aware in Georgia. Georgia was granted $70,000 to conduct motorcycle-only checkpoints, and they will be out there.
They're all doing it now.
Betsy, what country was that in, you said?
Georgia.
Yeah, it's right next to Russia.
Woo, it's almost past my bedtime. That almost went over my head, honey.
It's a former Soviet republic.
Georgia,
that's what I was worried about.
Yeah, so they're putting up roadblocks there.
Oh,
correct.
Yeah.
It's like the New Hampshire House passed a bill that prohibits the state from accepting the federal funding of motorcycle-only roadside checkpoints.
And other states are trying to jump on board and do the same thing, and I think that's a damn good thing.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping that we're going to see some legislation that would make it illegal to do that because it's discriminatory.
Exactly. Well, our good friend John Del Santo sent me an email yesterday after I sent him this email, and he did some research, and he found out that the California Office of Traffic Safety will not accept funds or fund motorcycle-only checkpoints.
Well, that's nice.
Wow. Wow. Usually California's the first one on the hip rate for that.
Well, this is the thing. Whatever happens on the East Coast yesterday could happen out here today.
Exactly.
Whatever happens out here today could happen on the East Coast tomorrow.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Jan, Betsy, John's health's not doing that good. If you know, if you ever get a chance to drop him an email or something like that. But with every breath he has, he's out there fighting for our rights.
In fact, he was going to call in today, but he had to go to the doctor. He's getting fitted for a couple of hearing aids.
I didn't tell you this, but let me tell you something right now. Fran and Jan, that's Fran's wife, John rather, Fran and John, they drove up and met me in Carlsbad. Remember we did the Vietnam traveling wall?
Right.
They had I think Fran took a picture of this little girl, a couple years old, holding a bunch of flowers in her hand with the wall for a backdrop. It was the most tear-jerking picture I've taken. They've given it to me.
Oh, she's an awesome photographer.
She's given the picture to me. They put it in a plaque and all that, and I'm going to present it during the Paralyzed Veterans Run coming up. We're going to give that one of the awards away. That's instead of Jan or Fran, she'll be showing up with John and saying, blah, 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 blah. I said, Bill, will you see that somebody gets this one? They could have got the publicity. They don't.
Speaking of events, Larry, what have you been up to with the Marine bike?
Well, the latest thing was the New York Bike Show down in the city at the Javits Center. We were down there. Guys, I want to tell you something. Ladies, I can't get over it. Till today, I can't get over it. This bike is 6 years old, and it's still mobbed. As big as the Javits Center, one of the promoters or whatever for the show walked over and said, couldn't believe our – well, I was with a couple of them, with Fastlane Biker and Jerry, I can't think, from Custom Cycle Works out in New Jersey. But the Marine bike, I tell you what, the booth was packed every single day. People who heard about it was there, came over to see it. It's 6 years, and it hasn't dropped the enthusiasm. And then when I tell the story, of course, it's just unbelievable, guys, unbelievable.
Well,
this bike is really...
The message stays as important as it was from day one. It's the same message. I don't want to ever have another parent lose a child, but unfortunately that continues. And your message, your motorcycle, your personal message, it touches lives over and over and over. You're the spokesperson for a lot of people, my friend. You know, we have that event. It's about the same time of the year as we had it last year when you sent those pictures. And I got a couple of calls on that, and I was going to talk to you about that offline, but since we brought it up in the Paralyzed Vets Run that we're going to do, and it's on Sunday, April 2nd. So what if we could arrange something with you, Larry? There's we have one of the Biker for Christ churches. They wanted to know. Pastor Z called me and asked me if we could talk to you about getting one of those. They can hang in the vestibule.
Oh,
of the
yeah,
church,
that's right too.
In the vestibule of the church, and then if we could get a whatever. And this time if we got to pay for them, we'll pay for them, or however you want to do it, we'll work it out. But we'd like to get, if we could get three or four of them this time.
This is a church, and he wants to hang it in the church. So besides the fact of the praying to God, he wants everybody in his parish to realize families are making sacrifices daily. That's how important that photograph, that motorcycle is, sir.
Oh, in fact, may I request one which I will pay for our Marine Corps League ride that I'm working on right now, which is September 18th, the Jennifer J. Harris ride in memory of a female Marine who was shot down in Iraq back in February of 2007. And this is going to be our fourth annual ride. The reason I'm up is because I'm working on the revised flyer. And as soon as I get the okay, I'll get the flyer out to you all. But I would love to be able, seeing as these guys are Marines, to flyer of that bike in the American Legion post where we hold our meetings and post it at the ride. I think it would mean a lot.
Well, just to let you know, it may be a Marine bike, but I tell everybody, if my son was in the Army, that would have been an Army bike sitting there. If he was in the Navy, that would have been a
totally
Navy bike.
Totally understandable.
This is for all the kids. I don't know if you know the story. I had lost my son in 2005. If you remember the summer of 2005, a lot of Ohio reservists were getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, all told, 325, the reservists out of Brook Park, Ohio, lost 48 kids. Till today is the most that any one group unit has lost, if you want a record. It is a record.
Right.
That,
and right now, Camp Pendleton is closing in on that, and it's a shame.
Oh, no, really. For a single unit?
Yes.
Oh, my God, no.
Yes, and guys, some of them guys, they came back, and they're gone again.
Yeah.
If you know what an LHA is?
No.
The mini carrier?
Yes.
Okay, it has the Harriers, the jump jets, has the helicopters, has anywhere from, it has a company of Marines on it at all times.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many there are, but I'm getting two of them ready to leave.
Yeah. Joey did before the war, Joey did a pump on one of those.
Yeah, I did a pump on them too. They run a lot better now. We just redid all the ballast tanks on both of them, so they'll float a little better now. Like sitting in a rocking chair.
There you go. We'll definitely work out the pictures. There's no doubt about it. I gotta get some of these. These are the ones that you're going to be getting are the laminated ones, like I gave you last time.
Okay, that would be great. So, and then whatever we need to do, Larry, to make that happen, we'll do it.
Yeah.
All right. Yes.
Tell
if
me what I need to send and where.
Okay. I'll give you my email address. Email me, and then we'll work it out offline. Okay.
I'll send Betsy your email address.
Awesome. Thank you.
And
no
then
problem.
I'll get back to you and I'll get a hold of my friends who do the lamination. We'll see if we can work out a better price and.
Okay.
We'll make it happen.
Husband, right?
What's that?
That's Lisa Petroselli and her husband.
No, Dino Purchase. He's the one who took the pictures. He's the one who took the picture. His my other friends, Scott and Michelle, they do the laminations for Dino.
Oh, okay. But Dino's married to Lisa, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been dealing with Lisa with New York Writer.
Right, New York Writer magazine. Carmilla.
Carmilla, yes.
Yeah. Nice, good lady. She is good lady.
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, right now, we're making friends around the world. This show is archived, but it goes out right now. We're on 38 countries.
Wow, really cool. Very cool.
So people around the world are hearing about this, and I'll put
along with taping it here the next day
right.
and all that because of time constraints and all that. But yeah, this goes on and on.
So what I'll do is I'll put that up. I'll put that up in the blog. I'll put that picture up that you sent me just to get people.
Okay.
Do
me a favor. I haven't changed the website much, but if you want to put the website underneath it, so they can go right to the website, too.
I will. I'll do like I did last time, Larry. I will.
There you go. Outstanding. And what I'll do is I'll get Dino to sign them all before I ship them out to you.
Okay. And if you want to sign them, too, that would be great. Awesome.
Okay.
Oh,
very
yeah.
Good.
An autograph would be awesome, honey.
You know,
so what were we talking about before we got on this?
Tell everybody out there that I speak a lot of different events, and I've never prepared a speech in my life. But every now and then I do incorporate this one small phrase, and I'd like any of you ladies or gentlemen that would like to embellish it, plagiarize it, please feel free. When I get in and I'm speaking, women's club, whatever I'm going to speak to, I ask everybody to close their eyes. I ask him to do me a favor and drive down to San Diego and pick up our veteran friend. I ask them to go down to the Star of India, a boat by the sea. It's a beautiful sunny day. Can you see the seagulls flying? The ocean is absolutely gorgeous. Can you see our veteran friend you're going to pick up? Good, I'm glad. Okay, park your car, go up to our veteran friend. Now, I want you to pick out an Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Air Force, whatever military that you're familiar with, I want you to put that uniform on our veteran friend that you're going to pick up and take back up here to our house up here. So I ask everybody, can you see them? Then I ask you to do one more favor. I ask everybody to, have you noticed that our friend's in a wheelchair and they have no legs? I'm going to ask you to push the wheelchair to the van so we can get our veteran friend home. I want you to look down on our veteran friend and look at that Army uniform, Navy uniform, Air Force uniform, whatever you associate, and I ask you to see that person with the no legs. Then I ask everybody to open their eyes, and I say, please, anybody raise your hand that saw a woman in that wheelchair. Nobody once has ever raised their hand. Please feel free to use that if you need it.
Mm.
I didn't mean to depress everybody. Back here, everybody's still there.
Oh, yeah, we're still here.
It's true, though. It's damn true.
Yep. Oh, I tell you. Wow. You lost me for words now.
Have you you got anything else coming up before you're taking off with the bike?
Here we go. I don't know if any of your listeners are going to Washington Memorial Day weekend. For Rolling Thunder.
I'll put it up for you.
It's every year. It's probably the biggest, bigger than Daytona, bigger than Sturgis. They have I think last year was 650,000 people down there. They shut down Washington for 4.5-5 hours for a motorcycle parade protest to bring our ties back.
I have to say that hearing the name came from. They filled all the 8 different sections of the Pentagon parking lot with motorcycles, and they have this so organized. And everybody starts their engines at the same time, and that's where the name Rolling Thunder comes from. And just being in that parking lot and hearing those motorcycles start and then rolling out onto the parade route and seeing the veterans in the wheelchairs lining the streets and the families waving their flags. And last year there was this one lone Marine who stood there saluting at attention the whole parade until everybody passed. It was just phenomenal. It's something everybody should do at least once. I'm sorry, Larry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Quite all right. Sergeant Tim has been doing that for 25 years.
Wow.
And to ride in that is absolutely awesome. We've been doing it for the past 4 years with the Marine bike. I had a Vietnam vet ride because a guy from Rolling Thunder. A quick little story. This is one of the, I believe in, I'm going to see Joey again. The very first time I publicly showed the bike, Rolling Thunder guys are there selling T-shirts. Met a guy by the name of Kenny Zip. He says, Larry, this bike needs to be down in Memorial Day at Rolling Thunder. I had no idea what was going on down there at that time. Well, we went down. All I asked them to do was to pick a guy. I wanted a Vietnam vet to ride it because it was about the respect that those guys never got. And if my son was standing alongside me, he would have agreed with me. So they went back and picked the guy, and it happened to be Kenny Zip. So we took the bike over so he could ride it a little bit before we went down. Put the bike on a trailer, and Kenny's wife asked me, when did Joey die? I said, April 27th. Kenny looked at me, he goes, that's my birthday. It's just one of those things. You know, I cut the story down because it went on a little bit longer than that. But anyway, we've got the memorial. Not only that's going on, a bunch of Joey's brothers from 325 are running. They call it the Memorial Day 100. If you go on Facebook, they're on there. They run from the War Memorial in Richmond, Virginia, to the Iwo Jima Memorial in Washington, D.C., which is just about 109 miles.
And their message,
the first year they did it was for the 48. This year they're changing the message up a little bit. They're running for everybody. But their main message is, remember why you have the day off. Someone gave their life so you can have that day off, to have that free beer, and have the freedoms that you have today. And that's their message. Anyway, I would like, if anybody's going to be down there, about 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, at the Iwo Jima Memorial, have a bunch of guys there. So when these kids run up there, or kids, young gentlemen run up there, they're greeted, and they didn't do it in vain. That's all I got. That's it.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Larry.
Yeah, Iwo Jima Day is coming up.
Yes, it is.
What's Iwo Jima called?
An honor breakfast up here at the Portuguese Veterans, and they're going to have a breakfast and then run a documentary. And I have to say, in my detachment, we have 4 Iwo Jima vets, and they are awesome. And each one of them wears the motorcycle vest underneath their blazers with their colors on. It's hysterical. They're just so cool.
Yes,
what's
they are.
What's Iwo Jima called now? What's the new name of the island? Do we know? Anybody know? Can you remember it?
No, not at all.
No, they changed the name of the island just recently.
Oh.
Remember that?
Speaking of the Rolling Thunder, you know, let me tell you a quick story about my ride. I went from the Raleigh area where I live, and I rode up to Roanoke, Virginia. I talked to Dixie Deb the night before and said, "Hey, you got a spare room?" She goes, "Yeah, I got a spare bedroom. Come on up." Dixie Deb's a biker chick from many moons ago, just like I am. So and she's got nice choppers. She actually wrenches better than all the guys around in the area. They take the bikes to her.
Hoorah!
Yeah, she's great, you know. But anyhow, I go, you know, well, the reason why I want to come up to Roanoke is because Rolling Thunder, the southern route, they've got a northern route and a southern route. Rolling Thunder, the southern route, is going to be riding through through Roanoke, and they're going to go over to the VA Medical Center. And
hi.
So she goes, "Oh, excellent! Well, come on up, and we'll take a ride on over there, and we'll greet everybody as they're riding in." And so I went up there and had a beautiful ride, and had a little bit of problem with the bike on the way up, but fixed that right on the road.
Well, at least you had a good wrench with you.
Yeah, yeah, always. So I get up there and we headed over to find out where they were going to be riding in from, and by the time that we got there, it wasn't but about half hour later that they were going to be coming in or whatever. So we quickly grabbed a sandwich or something, went back, and it was there were a lot of bikes, and you know, so we were talking with the different motorcyclists that were coming in and asking, so where are you riding in from? A lot of them were coming all the way from California. Some of them joined the ride in Arizona and New Mexico, Texas, you name it, all across the country, all the way across. And there were hundreds of them. But I'll tell you what, Bill, you're going to appreciate this, and everybody's going to appreciate this, I think. My favorite part of it was not the motorcyclists themselves. It was the veterans themselves. They're out there in their wheelchairs or sitting out, just watching. They were having the time of their life. There was this blind veteran who was walking around. He said he loved it. You know, he said it was fantastic. And you know, so my favorite part of the whole experience was just talking with those veterans and saying, "Welcome home, thanks for your service." And you know, as soon as you say that, you know they know that you're a veteran, because a lot of non-veterans don't know that. But if you are if you've never served in the military, but you are very proud of the military, your troops, please do, when you see a veteran, say, "Welcome home. Thank you for your service." We've done a great job at spreading that word, and we don't ever want to see what happened with the Vietnam veterans returning ever again.
Oh, I had the Commandant of the Marine Corps tell me and the people that I work with on a daily basis, hand in hand doing this, that you guys build us great ships, keep on building them.
I want to talk basics about Vietnam very quickly. It's been a long time, and yet many of my veteran friends still are suffering from the war. You remember Danny Deal, don't you?
Right.
Danny Deal and I were outside having a little lunch in this little cafe, and we had a local police helicopter, fly right over the restaurant, so low. Danny jumped under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was so embarrassed and all that, and I just said, stuck my hand out, he grabbed it, he jumped back up and all that. Here's a man that the shock effect of the helicopter right over him, he jumped under the table. That man's 65 years old.
Yep.
That stuff on his life, and it goes on his life. He never knows when it's going to hit him. I want to just say, recently we had a Vietnam vet. The police called me in on about 6 months ago now. This man jumped off his motorcycle and ran in the bushes. He thought, he's back in Vietnam. We got enough yep. people and all to help him like that, but it never goes away. Sometimes
right.
it slows down, but it never goes away for some of these men and women that fought all the wars we have.
Yeah, you're not kidding now.
Yeah, that PTSD is some powerful stuff, and I'm glad that they're finally recognizing it and that they're awarding the disabilities and doing a lot. There's a new website for it. There's new services. Every weekend when I do the POW/MIA Veterans News, I see more links. I send them out. I just hope people will go and get the help that they need. Because you're right, it doesn't go away. My roommate is a Vietnam veteran and still has his moments when, you know, he thinks he's back in Vietnam, and it's just a trigger.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes.
Oh.
You just never know. A song. Sometimes a song on the radio can bring him back. I remember for myself, this is not just a... bring some credibility to the sentence. When I was going overseas, I was going to LAX, and I was I was driving up to the airport. A new song by Peter Ball, Paul and Mary, Leaving on a Jet Plane. I cannot hear that song while reminding myself everything was different from that point on.
Right.
Yep. It's amazing how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, just something so small that you think is trivial, but it isn't.
Well, you know, there's a guy that he had sung the I lost my train
you
of thought.
You did. There you go. You started something. You don't know where you are now.
No,
you're in deep trouble.
I lost my train of thought.
What do you think about it for a second?
But this guy has post-traumatic stress disorder, and he's under treatment for it. He's been under treatment since the Vietnam War, but he stood up at a tea party. And
he sung
the crowd. And I think we deserve to give this guy a few minutes of our time.
Maybe we deserve a treat.
Right.
Not about this gentleman.
So,
I hope you guys appreciate it.
Join me in listening to this.
It's a short thing, but it makes me feel good. Christine Aguilera often, she should have sung that. We should put that guy up there. He could have sung it much better, I'm sure.
Honey, a lot of people didn't know there were other verses.
Oh, boy. Oh, Christine Aguilera, nice job, you function.
Guys are bad.
Just to think she was a Mouseketeer in one time.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse Club.
Just to liven this up a minute, Art sent a private message to Bill, and he said, "Did Bill say it's a short thing, but it makes me feel good?"
Oh,
I'm talking about you, Art. Huh?
Guys are bad. And I'm not even going to say it.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
The wrong way.
God,
yes,
you
that's,
know what?
Yes, that's Betsy. Art.
I feel something sincere, and this is what I get.
Ay, ay, ay.
Nice. Real nice.
All right.
Well, I think after some of the sadness we've shared together here, we needed a moment of latitude.
Without a doubt. If you can't have
you
a,
can
have
do
a
it! You can do it all night long!
Oh, I come with letters of recommendation, so I'm fine with that. Don't worry about me.
My God.
Portfolio letters of recommendation is all you know. Where are we going? All right, let's get back. You know what I want to thank? I want to thank all those draftees, those young men, and well, they were all men only. A lot of people joined the military, and they felt it was something they wanted to do. A few people had the choice to go to jail or go in the military, but let's thank all those draftees who were sitting home, happy, pleasant, like me with my toes in the water at the beach, and get a letter, drafted. Let's never forget those special people.
Well, you know, Bill.
Special
you know, Bill,
people.
You know, Bill, they are special people. And just that we have this little moment of latitude right here.
Do go on, sir. Do go on.
Okay. David Letterman did something a while ago, and I'm going to play this one. And I think you guys will enjoy this.
The category tonight, top 10 ways the United States Marines are celebrating their 234th birthday. 234 years ago. On this date, 1775, the United States Marine Corps was founded by the Continental Congress in Philadelphia, and they're celebrating the 234th anniversary of the United States Marine Corps.
Actually,
it
was 235th.
Tonight's top 10 list. Please welcome 10 members of your United States Marine Corps. Here we go. Let us go.
I want you to know that it has this even.
Top 10 ways the Marines are celebrating their 234th birthday. Say hello to Staff Sergeant Justino Vasquez.
Sleeping in until 5 a.m.
That's right. Closing right off. Number 9, Sergeant Jin Lee.
Trying to find enough paper to gift wrap a CH-53 Echo Super Stallion cargo helicopter.
Exactly. Number 8, Sergeant Alana Pereira.
We rented the entire Times Square Olive Garden.
Yeah. Number 7, Staff Sergeant Jonathan Garcia.
My mom is making $200 in cupcakes.
200,000 cupcakes. Number 6, Gunnery Sergeant Suki Forbes.
When you work on an amphibious transport dock, every single day is like your birthday.
That's right.
That was weak.
Number 5, Sergeant Helen Cardenas.
Trying to get booked on Leno's 10 at 10.
What? Really? Really? Number 4, Staff Sergeant Crystal Taylor.
Protect the United States from that hair-pulling soccer player.
Oh, no, look out. Number 3, Sergeant Wesley Alexander.
Pint of ice cream and some Sex in the City DVD.
Number 2, Sergeant Leandros Rubio.
Presenting jokes that don't seem particularly funny, sir.
Yeah, right. Thanks. And the number one way the Marines are celebrating their 234th birthday, here's Second Lieutenant Kenneth Johnson.
Being badass as usual.
That's a good one. That's a good way to end it.
All right, let me ask them about that. What was the last one you said, being badass as usual? Do you get the impression the Marines are being more like the Army? I thought the job of the Army was to occupy and control, and the job of the Marines was to invade, attack, and let the Army come in. But I think the Marine Corps has gotten so big, the organization is so immense, corporation, I think we're losing the gist of what you call Marine Corps. I think they're more like Army now. I don't think the original concept Marines today is valid.
I think you're wrong.
Well, that's just your opinion, sir. Anybody else want to comment on that?
I agree with Philip.
I'm going to disagree also.
I want the Marine Corps streamlined. I want all the fat gone. I want to know that our Marines can jump in a boat anywhere there is and hit that thing, and as soon as they're done, send the Army in to control them. That's what I think it should be. That, I believe, was, again, first of all, I'm the United States Army, but I believe the concept was Marine hit tech, pull out, let the Army come in. The Army is the Army. The Marine Corps is not the Army.
That is still what they're doing, though, Bill.
It's gotten too big.
Isn't that still what they're doing?
Oh, I think it's gotten too big. Marine Corps doesn't need to be doing things that the Army can be doing. Marine Corps, I see them again, attack. Whatever's got to be done, done. Get out, have the Army come in and control. I don't like Marines sitting over there stationary over there in the sandbox areas and all that. I think the Army should be doing that. Marines should be an attack force. Get in, get out. Only my opinion,
guys. I agree with
that.
Yes, I agree with 100%, Phil.
You don't have to agree with me. Just the way
I agree with that. But
don't give me dirty eyes.
What I disagree with, though, is that I think that they're still doing that. Okay, I think that the Marines are still the pointed edge of the sword. You know, and I think that the Army still is the occupying.
Correct.
Or
yeah.
The army is the occupying force. The Marine Corps is the security force. They're America's 911.
Get in, get out. We don't need them sitting over there, just being over there. Get in, get out. Get in, get out. That's gonna be. I like to think of the Marine Corps as a very streamlined
Bill, because you're just jealous that we're better trained than the Army guys.
God almighty. The work I did in the military was something you never could have done. I was such a highly skilled technician.
I did it from a long distance, Bill.
Oh, God. Listen to this here.
Oh, here we go.
Except the Marine Corps is always, again, it's an elite force, streamlined, small. I think the Marine Corps today should trim all the fat, all the stuff it doesn't need, and have somebody say, bam, we're there. When you pick up the phone, call us. As soon as we take care of the problem, bam, the Army comes in. That's the occupying force. That's the way I see the military. Only one man's opinion, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, my opinion is one shot, one kill.
Well, that's streamlined enough. Then go home. Let the Army go and take care of the rest of it.
I think they're still a lean, mean fighting machine.
With the technology we got today,
yeah.
Everybody said, "I'm sending over the droids."
There you go.
You know, I got news
for you. There's already drones flying all over your state right now, recording exactly what we're talking about.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Can I say a four-letter word starting with an F?
Army,
yes,
has trained him. He's doing droids now. He quit doing Harley Davidson's, my ace mechanic, and he's working in the Army now fixing those droids. Drones.
Yep. No kidding, really.
Yep. Even if for several reasons, he's a young man, he had three children, and the Army offered him a lot. He figured what Kennedy's Customer Cycles was paying wasn't a lot for three kids and all that. So,
was economics. That's what
it was great.
But it worked out good for him.
Yeah. But who would think that, you know, in this day and age, you'd join the military when you have a civilian job? But they offered him an awful lot. And the money they offered him, because of his training, MMI school and all that, it was cha-ching, let me tell you right now. We hope Ian is doing okay wherever he is these days. His wife promised me fixing those planes without the pilots, he's in safety. When it crashes, they have other crews break it back, so all he does is fixes them like that. So
Wherever he is tonight, I hope he's doing okay. At any point in time, he could go back into picking up a rifle. And that is your primary MOS, is that correct?
That's correct.
No matter what you do, your primary MOS is you got your rifle, buddy.
Oh, what was it, 0311, right?
Right.
Whatever? Okay.
Right. But my other one, my secondary MOS was a 1316. That's a combat engineer.
Combat engineer.
So I either shot at him or blew him up, one or the other.
Well, you wore a T-shirt. If you see me running, you better be behind me.
Absolutely.
I like that one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
just like they got, you know, when I told you that the law enforcement, they're using the domestic use of aerial drones by law enforcement is likely to prompt a privacy debate. This happened out of Texas, but the suspect's house just west of the city sat on a hilltop at the end of a steep, exposed driveway. Agents with the Texas Department of Safety, the FBI, the ATF, and SWAT broke down as dawn broke. A SWAT team waiting to execute search warrants, last-minute aerial sweep of the property, in part to check for unseen dangers. So they're not only photographing what it is. But they said if they put up a helicopter, you might try and shoot down a helicopter. So they use drones. But they launch all kinds. They're birds. They're actually, you know how we used to fly those model planes with a little gas engine?
Yeah.
That's what they are.
I used to put cherry bombs on them, long fuse, let the plane go off, so it explode in midair. I lived in Boston. We'd go to 7th story. We'd let the airplane off and blow them up. That was my youth.
Well, I'll tell you what, you do that today, you're going to have the Secret Service, every agency on your, you get the name on your ass now. Jeez, can't do any of that stuff.
Actually,
we were fun when we were kids, wasn't it?
Yeah, we used to go down to this place called Columbus Park next to the Dan Ryan Expressway.
In what state?
Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
Illinois. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it'd be rush hour traffic, and we'd buy a bucket of golf balls for a buck. You got 30 balls for a buck. They give you an iron or a driver. They gave you whatever you wanted. Well, you were supposed to go the other way and go down to the driving range, but we'd go up on top of the hill, and it would take them. There was no exit there. The nearest exit was a mile down one way and a mile down the other way. So by the time they figured out where we were hitting the golf ball from, which they already knew, but this went on for about 4 months till they caught us at the end of the summer.
Mischievous.
And what happened?
I got an ass whooping, wouldn't believe.
Whooping from your dad, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. No, you didn't see bars or anything like that. Yeah, I remember those days. We used to shut down the highway to go drag racing. You know what I mean?
Then he was more surprised that I was using a golf club. He thought I might have been baseball
bat. That's what I remember.
Baseball bat, right?
Ball bats on our golf balls, yeah. And I'd tell us a quick story. My father was in a third tour in Vietnam, and I was in high school, senior. I had a K-model Sportster, flathead. And Saturday night, I spent 3 months going on the bike, getting it running and all that. Saturday night, I went downtown Carlsbad, San Diego. No traffic lights, stop sign. I pulled up the stop sign. I looked to my right. Behind the gas station was the local cop. I blew through that stop sign, ran around town, nothing. I never saw the cop again. Carlsbad, where I live in, is a very small town at that time, so I got bored and I went home. Next week, I went downtown. I got to the one stop sign in my town. I looked behind the gas station. There was the cop. I blew through that stop sign. I went like a bat out of hell up and down alleys. Nothing. I got bored again, so I went home to my mama's house. There, the police were all waiting. He had my mother downstairs, and my mother made me apologize to the police and promised them I would not run them again. And I said to the police, why would you go to my mama? Well, we couldn't catch you on that Harley-Davidson, Bill, and for your own safety, we're worried about you. So there's only like 2 or 3 Harleys in the whole community. We knew it was you. So we went to your mama's house, and God, she acted like, you got these officers, they could have been in danger and all this. I'm going to the police again. Why would you call up my mama? The times were different back in the days, guys. Way different.
Yes, they were. I used to live in Marlow, New Jersey, which is the uppermost northern part before you hit New York State. Jersey was 21 for drinking. New York State was 18. So, you know, go to New York State, buy a six-pack or whatever, go back into Jersey to the party. Well, every time we did on the weekend, we had to, we call him Uncle Mickey. He would stop us and take our beer. No matter which, there's a dozen ways to get into town. Every time we tried something, there was Uncle Mickey sitting here waiting for us. Take our beer. So we smartened up, only bought a quart, then went back and got the real stuff.
Oh, jeez.
But nowadays, you're going to jail.
Yeah, we used to have, you know, you remember the old beer trucks with the slide-up door?
Oh, yeah.
There used to be 9 or 10 of us, sometimes more than that, but we'd all grab a case of beer in the middle of the afternoon. And then about 7, 8 o'clock at night, we go to the park. But we built, and if you know a city park, it's huge. Mm-hmm. And we built tree houses up in the trees. They never bothered us till we got up in the trees because there was nowhere to go.
Yep.
Problems, you know that, Mister. You have a lot to answer for someday.
Yep.
You know what I do talk about also, it ties right into this here. Growing up in Boston, South Boston, the Irish neighborhood, the cops walked the beats. There was no crime in my neighborhood. There was no graffiti. There was nothing because the cop knew everybody.
Yep.
Today, I see the cops making no attempt to reach out to the public at all. They don't go door to door, hey, how you doing? I'm the local cop on the beat. Nothing. They sit in their cars, put the lights on, give you a ticket, they go back in their cars.
Well,
they don't reach out.
Well, you know,
they
Bill,
try to reach out for you, Mr.
Yeah, well, that's true. But, you know, when up until the beginning of last summer, we never had anybody walking a beat anymore.
No.
I start going downtown. I start doing things around town. We got 8 or 9 of them walking a beat every night.
I would, as a businessman, not that I worry about my security. Believe me, at Kennedy's Custom Cycles, I don't worry about security. But if you're a small mom-and-pop shop, I would think that you'd want the police to get out there and walk in. Hey, how's it going? Everything okay? Let them know they've got a friend on the street. And yet the police department is insulated, isolated. They've eliminated themselves from the community. And that's a big mistake, police officers around the world.
Right. I agree with you 100%. Because I remember when we were growing up as kids, we knew all their names.
Yeah, they knew
your family. They knew who you were, and it was a respect thing that you didn't do anything stupid in front of them, except for stop signs.
As a kid,
or if your dad just happened to imbibe a little too much on a Saturday night, they drove him home instead of taking him to jail.
Exactly.
That's the other thing, you know. Because I can remember one night coming out of a bar. This is how drunk I was. I'm standing there trying to find my keys. Mobile cop pulls up. Larry, what are you doing? I says, I'm going home. He says, no, you're not getting a car. He took me to my apartment. He says, you go in there, you stay in there. Well, in the condition I walked back to the bar. There I am standing there looking for my keys. He pulls back up again. This time I stayed home. But you know where my keys were? On the roof of my car. So, you know, any other guy would have thrown me in jail. Nowadays you get thrown. But it's just, they knew you. They knew who you were. If you were a knucklehead, they knew how to handle you. Today, they just, there's no personality there at all.
No.
In the late 1960s, I'd be told by the cops, okay, Bill, we're going to turn our bright lights on. You keep your motorcycle in our bright lights. We're going to escort you home. And you promise us right now, you don't go out again tonight. Okay, I'll stay home. And that was the end of everything.
Yes.
It's, what, $10,000 in California if you get picked up now
with
fines and lawyers?
No.
More?
Over 30 grand.
Oh, my God.
Is it that high?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
By the time you get done with everything, it's going to cost you 30 grand.
Being that there is so many knuckleheads on the road, you don't need to be drunk out there anyway.
No.
You know,
go home every night.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm going to have a drink, there's no way in hell I'm getting behind the wheel of a car or any vehicle. My bike, anything.
I choose not to drink, but I have a fully stocked bar in the house. And if you come over with your friend, a guest, if one of you is sober, going to drive the car home, I have no problem opening my bar up to my guest. As long as they say, hey, Bill, I'm the sober one. I'm not drinking at all. I keep liquor in my house, not because I'm afraid of it. I just choose not to drink. but I don't want to say I can't be near it. And I don't want my friends to be hypocrites. Oh, I got to drink iced tea. I'm going to Bill's. You don't have to do anything, but tell me when you're sober driving the car home so it's not on my conscience.
Right, exactly.
It's just like we have a lot of things at a lot of bars, and we've actually let the air out of tires on people and told them, give me your keys, and then the fight starts. And then the next day they'll come back and apologize. But
exactly.
For that first 10-15 minutes, it's hell on wheels.
Well, we have a little secret in North County, I'm sure. I hope this doesn't get out. I'm at the bar 2-3 times a week. I stop in, talk to my friends, because that's where they are. I leave the bar Saturday night. I make a lot of noise, yelling, hey, good night, everybody, good night. I start my bike up, and I rev it up, and I rev it up, and I take off down the street. If a cop pulls his lights on me, that's a signal for all my half-drunk friends. Get on your bike and go the other way. They do that. Why do you keep pulling me over? I haven't done nothing wrong.
And they know we don't drink.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've had a woman lieutenant walk in and tell the people inside, yeah, you know that guy. He comes in here all the time. He drinks here all the time. Mm. What guy? I don't drink.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, yeah, that guy Phil. He comes in here all the time. He drinks in here.
You're not a hypocrite either. You have a bar stock here.
Right.
Yeah. You know. We have alcohol and friends like that. It's not that we are a problem with drugs and alcohol. I've just paid too heavy a price by seeing all of my friends in the gravesite. And I've said this before in the year. I have more people I call brothers who are in the grave in the cemeteries than I call brothers walking around today.
Yep, I can imagine. Yep. It's just not worth it. Monetarily wise and life wise, it's just not worth it.
No, we're getting depressing again now. I was really happy. What the hell happened to us?
Yeah. And then I got this email earlier, but I just got reminded by Art that abated California has a 2011 helmet repeal bill, Assembly Bill 695. Chris Norby is the author out of Fullerton, California. It's already on the blog, but anybody get through cards, letters, phones, petitions, whatever, and then we're going to pack that hearing room.
Now, if you want to wear a helmet, that is your choice. What we're asking you is to stop making it mandatory. One of the very first helmet protests was at my shop, and I had a whole bunch of Honda Goldwing riders show up wearing their full helmets, and I was a little bit taken back. They said, no, Bill, we choose to wear helmets. We don't want to be forced to wear helmets. So I applaud all those ladies and gentlemen that came to the first run. And I'm reminding people today, if you want to wear a helmet, that's your prerogative. It's the mandatory part. That's all we're talking about, folks. If they pass the law that says no more helmets, I might still wear mine. I don't know. The point is I want to have my choice. That's all I'm asking for.
I'll tell you what, Connecticut doesn't have the helmet law. And I know we've gone up there, and I would say 95% of the guys keep the helmets on.
Yeah.
It's because it's their choice.
And it's nice to have the choice.
That's all we ask.
It's just like if they pull you over and tell you to take it off, you don't have to take it off.
No.
Right. Right. That would be the flip coin of it. That going in Connecticut where there is no law for a helmet, and then it's mandatory that you got to take it off.
Well, here in California, they'll handcuff you. Well, they handcuffed me. They handcuffed me for my own safety and then took it off my head.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That was wrong.
Phil has some special friends in the police department.
In fact, I got pictures of them.
Wow. I can't get over that one.
I'm going to put the legislative proposal that I just issued today to my legislative representatives into the chat room in just a second. Here we go. I'm pasting it right now. And this is what I want the helmet law to look like in North Carolina.
Can I post that? I just did. Can I post it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, don't include my email address. you know, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's like here's what the helmet law should look like. It should say General Statute 20-140.4 repealed by session laws. Bingo, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking for anything else. See, that's where everyone gets into trouble, I think, is you submit these legislative bills not asking for what you really want. So I said, this is what I really want. That's the starting point. Now, if you want to try to talk me into mandatory insurance and all that kind of thing, we'll talk about that, and I'll explain to you my positions on that. If it's equivalent to the automobile drivers and not discriminatory towards the motorcyclist, we'll talk about that. Okay, but I'm not going to make any deals. I'm very firm on this. No compromise. You want to take me to court? Fine. It'll cost you another $8,000, just like the last time that you tried to get $25 from me.
Exactly. Why are so many people afraid of our government?
Well, you've got to tell them what you want.
Because they're intimidating.
You have to know what you want to begin with.
And
a lot of people don't know their rights, basically. I think that's what it is.
That's what we're getting. That's what. Hopefully, that's what's getting out when we do this every week.
Right.
Maybe I can help all you people across America to get out of your tickets when you get pulled over by the police.
What, tell them to
this
look for
me? Exactly what I was going to say. Screwdriver's two blocks down the street. The cops go taking off after him. Then I leave the area.
Huh. Well, gentlemen, it's getting late over here. I got to get up and go to work tomorrow.
Same here.
Yeah,
and I thank you. I thank you, Larry, and I'll give you a call probably Saturday if you're around. If not, I'll leave you a message.
Yeah, I should be around all day, sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Doing.
Anytime you want to drop in, man, you're welcome anytime.
Your message is being heard by so many people, and every time you hear it, a new person's hearing it. So your message is important for all of us. At least we forget.
And,
my big thing is that to hopefully I can get some sponsors to help me out, and maybe I can get out to the West Coast here. I've been out far, but I haven't been out. Well, I'd like to get out there, see you guys, but one of these days.
You can work on that.
You know, for sponsorship, I can run that in my e-zine for you.
Any help, I'd appreciate it all. It's going to be run through my son's scholarship fund, so it'll be charitable. Donation 5013.
Okay.
See whoever that is, and
whatever you want to put pen to paper and write it out on how you want to do it, and we'll format it, and Betsy and I will post it. We both have.
There you go.
Outstanding. I'll do that. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And anything we can do to help you, we will.
Because it is, you know, it not only keeps most Americans are abreast about you go to your day-to-day routine every day, and you forget about just kids still over there dying and fighting. And well, you know, and it just in your face type thing. And then I get to meet a lot of the Gold Star parents like myself. We cry a little bit, and we celebrate their lives. You know, that maybe I usually ask them for a picture, and I'll have the picture out there with the kids. For the parents that I've met so far, and I don't know whether it's.
Hey!
I hope it does some good.
Hang on, screw that. What about the American Legion Riders?
Yeah, I think I can get some help for you with the American Legion Riders. Betsy can probably get you some help with the Marine Corps Riders.
Who's doing the VFWs?
And
with Betsy, I think we're gonna have to get
bits on
this.
I've got to hook up with the. ALR as well.
I think we have to kibitz on this and get Larry involved in this and see what we can do to help him out.
Sure.
Yeah, because there's a whole a whole end of the country that haven't been to see yet. A lot of people need to see this thing.
Well, I got news for you. If we get you out here and we can, like, we're what, a mile and a half from camp? My front door is a mile and a half from the back gate of Camp Pendleton.
Oh, I'd love to have
it with Charlie in Tennessee.
Right. And then see if we can bring it out to Tennessee, too.
Nashville.
Let me talk to Charlie about that, and we'll see what we can do on that end, too, so we can get you. I think we're going to get you coast to coast, buddy.
The shame is the bike show coming up here March 12th and 13th.
Where's that?
Up Boston. In Washington, Mass. But I'll tell you, even more so than that bike show, the best bike show for you to be visible at would be the one that's done in Boston in every January. And I can get you promoter and organizer's email address and whatnot, and see if we can't get you some sort of a deal. Whereas you're like a charity.
Yep. Well, it'll be run through my through my son's fund, so it will be a charitable donation.
Mm-hmm.
So they can get a break on it in their taxes.
Yeah. And maybe we can get up enough support to get it paid even, you know, for the thing for the booth. And it may be if things go the way I'd like them to, I may have enough hookup to just get you in there, period.
Well, see, the nice thing about it with a lot of the promoters, they realize what they have.
Yeah.
After I get done explaining it to them. And
mm-hmm.
usually I get the spaces for free. I get the spaces for free. That's a gimme. If you want that bike there, you're gonna promote it, and it's for your own benefit to promote it.
Right. Well,
for number one,
I'll get your email address and I'll get you the promoter's information and whatnot, and I'll network the hell out of it with you.
All right. Very good. Very good.
Larry,
well,
this is Jan.
Phil's got my phone number and my email address and all that, so, yeah.
All right, I'll have him give you mine, and we'll swap.
Yep, sounds good.
Larry, this is North Carolina again. What's the website again to look at the motorcycle?
Oh, it's MarineCorpsTributeBike.com.
Okay, thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you, too.
On that note, I'm going to hang up. Fabulous, guys. I really appreciate you bringing me in. Good stuff. And y'all be
Bruins
safe.
Bruins didn't play tonight?
Pardon?
What, the Bruins didn't play tonight?
I don't know. I was busy working on my flyer.
That's your story.
Oh, no, I didn't have tickets to a game, even if they were playing. Wise guy.
All right, guys, we're down to 90 seconds, and I want to tell you all thank you. And the door's always open. And, Larry, I'll get in touch with you. Betsy, I will send you that information. I'll do that, and I'll send it to you also, Jan.
Okay.
Hey, Phil, can you give me a call after you get
off?
The number.
I'm going to say goodnight to all my friends. Goodnight, everybody.
I'll private message you the phone number.
Okay.
Okay.
Night,
guys,
Dan.
Guys,
night, Larry. Thank you so much.
Ladies, thank you very much. I appreciate it. A good time, and I'll be back.
Okay.
Night, bad penny.